too. Browns preseason is here, and the quarterback storylines are just beginning. Roster decisions for Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski could get interesting. We're, what, a week from Tuesday, right? Or no?
Tuesday.
Tuesday. I'm off by weekend.
Yeah.
Tuesday. So don't miss a minute of The Fan with the latest breaking news during your workday or on the go. Stream us at 92.3thefan.com or on your phone with the free Odyssey app. Cutdown day, as we just said, is coming up on Tuesday. So, Tom, let's jump into this.
This is the first year I haven't had to sweat out cutdown day.
You know what I always enjoyed on cutdown day? There are two things. I always enjoyed to see where free agents always end up jumping. Between the cutdown day to see where guys end up, if they end up on another roster, and the first hour and a half after the draft, I always think are really kind of fun times because...
You know, especially getting picked up, and yeah, there's all kinds of transactions.
Especially
going on, yeah.
If you're covering a college team on a regular basis, and there's guys that you think could have gone pro and didn't, and then all of a sudden you hear that their phone rang 2 seconds after the draft.
Well, in this day of social media as well, cutdown day begins at like 7 a.m. when guys start posting it. Agents and agencies start posting, you know, my client has been released, because obviously they're trying to get word out or what have you. So by the time the Browns give us the cuts at like 5 o'clock. We've already had the list for hours on end. It's going to be an interesting day, though, just because, you know, we'll see what goes on, you know, tomorrow in terms of who plays well. God forbid there's any injuries, what have you.
Yeah.
I'm still fascinated to see, you know, we've been told that this team is willing to take 4 quarterbacks on the roster, which, given the circumstances, I kind of understand, Andy. I know it seems to be counterintuitive and kind of goes against what you would think an NFL team would want to be doing, except you're the Browns and you've been searching for this for so long. So maybe the more options, the better. As we've talked about a million times, the quarterback line moves quickly in this town as well. So I can understand it. And the other thing too, in the argument that I've heard, and it makes a ton of sense, you know, how is it that the 4th quarterback is any different than the 7th or 8th defensive lineman, or the 7th and 8th offensive lineman, or the 6th wide receiver?
The difference is that 6th wide receiver can play special teams. That 4th quarterback isn't.
True too. But again, special circumstances with this club right now.
Yeah, no, you're right. That's why I've just kind of been like, are they really going to keep 3 guys on the roster that can't play on Sunday?
Yeah, again, it didn't make sense at the beginning of camp, Andy. But then given the situation now, right, with Pickett being injured, right, with Shadur just coming back from the oblique, with Dylan just getting himself, you know, a little bit healthier after being sidelined with the hamstring. So, boy, it's been something. And it was interesting to be out there this week just to kind of, you know, see it firsthand. You know, I haven't been out there a ton this summer, but I was able to spend a couple of days out there. And, you know, piggybacking off of what you said earlier, I have been impressed with the different tempo that I've seen in practices this year. I've seen, you know, everybody's just kind of on the hop, if you will, right? I mean, guys are moving. Like, there's a sense of a palpable sense of urgency when you see them on the field. I've also heard, and this is not surprising, and I'm not telling any tales out of school here, some of the assistant coaches really getting on guys, which we've heard in the past, but not necessarily with the kind of the vigor that I heard a couple of days this week. Like, Deuce Staley, who I have a lot of respect for, first of all, he was a hard-nosed player.
Yeah.
He's a hard-nosed coach, too. He drives these guys hard. I mean, those running backs go through some tough drills. And so, again, I've been very impressed with what I've seen out there in Berea.
Is that the biggest difference, the intensity? Like, because, I mean, you've covered every camp.
They tackled to ground earlier this summer, which was kind of a no-no for the longest time, right?
We were there that day, and everyone was like, what? What are they doing?
It's happening.
This isn't thud. And then you have to explain what thud is to
They're
everybody.
They're going
to
do the Oklahoma drill next?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, which I think was good. But, you know, and if you saw, like, even on the videos they posted, and Kevin's brought this up a couple of times, you know, he talked about the guys getting calloused, right? And I think he's known that he's got to get them, you know, they've had a problem with injuries early in the season over the last few years, right? So I think maybe some of the offseason was you know, trying to figure out what do we have to do different. And I think that's what they came up with, which is that we got to push these guys a little bit harder to get them ready for that week 1. Otherwise, we might have another rash of injuries like we've had in previous years.
How many
years.
Times have you done this, and I've done this, and I think every fan does this, when you go to watch, first of all, you watch the preseason, you're like, oh, this is good, I like this, I don't like that. And then you flip on the first game of the season, and it looks nothing like what you just watched. It's totally a different sport. And then you say to yourself, oh my God, why can't these guys tackle? Why can't they tackle? And I think part of that's an age thing, because, you know, as we've gone over the years, they've decreased the number of hard hits. And yeah, Jeff and I were sitting here earlier this week. We're like, oh, okay, so we're going to have the players after practice and we're going to hear what they have to say. And it's at like 11 o'clock or Stefanski after practice at 1:30.
Yeah.
And you're like, they only practice on the field for an hour and a half? Like, think about that.
Yeah, it is so different, Andy. You're right.
I mean, think about going to Lakeland or going to Kent State or like when I was a kid. Are you going to the morning session or the afternoon session, right?
Yeah, let alone them just carrying their shoulder pads, which were as big as, you know, you were. So, yeah, it's just different. You know, they do a lot of meetings now, right? A lot of walkthroughs, that kind of thing. So there's a lot to do for them, you know. In fairness, there's a lot to install. I think the thing that worries me about this season as much as anything, Andy, is it's very difficult to develop and win at the same time, right? It's impossible. I mean, everything's got to align. So I know we'll talk about the quarterbacks ad nauseum, but, impressed with the Schlesinger kid, I got to say.
I think that, you know, as we sit here and talk about the quarterbacks every day,
yeah,
his story is just phenomenal.
And it's kind of buried. I agree with you. And he, he flashes, to use a coaching term. You see him all over the place. Mason Graham has impressed me. I focused on him the other day. I really liked, as much as it's hard for me to watch Michigan sometimes. I know when I watched Michigan, he always stood out, right? Guy that was always around the ball, always making a play. He's changed his body even since the OTAs. I mean, he looks like he's in really good shape. Been really encouraged by him. Like some of these young wide receivers that I've seen. As I mentioned earlier, though, the one thing that has stood out to me that I've asked people about as well is still worried about the offensive line depth. And I know that Lucas kid, who they talked about as having as their swing tackle, had an ankle injury last week. And I'm not sure if he's not quite back yet. And I'm not sure if he's even available for tomorrow. But yeah, I've heard better things about Zinter, that he's making some progress as well.
I was concerned about what was going on there at the beginning of the season or beginning of practice.
Yeah, and I know he missed a block last week, like at an early stunt where Gabriel got sacked, and not necessarily his fault, but have heard good things about him behind the scenes as well.
Let me just dig into this Isaiah Bond thing too, because I want to talk about general things. So if Bond, I mean, it'd be pretty amazing if he's able to have significant time week one against Cincinnati, just knowing that he just hopped in this week. But I mean, stranger things have happened. You can get a guy out there. I mean, we're talking about a wide receiver that just, I'm not trying to simplify the position, but you need to run routes and put yourself in a position to make blocks.
But when you got a guy with that kind of speed out there though, Andy, we hear this all the time about taking the top off of a defense.
Yeah.
Just the element of him being out there makes everybody have to take another look at, okay, remember that guy's there. And you know what? There was a situation that I don't want to get myself into trouble here, but he got behind the defense earlier this week. And there may have been like a little bit of an assignment thing or whatever, but he caught a safety flat-footed and went by him in the blink of an eye. And you were like, oh, okay. And Flacco lobbed it out there like 50 yards and easy touchdown. So, and if you heard Flacco earlier in the week, when before Bond even hit the practice field,
right,
he brought up that speed element, like how crucial that can be for the offense.
Yeah, I found it interesting because we were reading scouting reports on him. Like when he was 8 years old, he was the fastest in the 100 in the country and just things like that.
Can you compare him? He's run a 4.2, he claims.
Yeah, can you compare him to anybody else that we've seen?
Oh, good question.
I mean, Dan wanted to bring up Anthony Schwartz, and I'm like, I mean, we know Schwartz is fast, but just didn't have the hands.
Not quite as... He's smaller than Schwartz. Schwartz has had a little better of a little bigger upper body build anyway. Nobody with the Browns really comes to mind. But you can see, boy, just the way he gets in and out of breaks, you're like, okay, I can see why they maybe went the extra mile here to get this kid.
So when we talk about wide receivers, so you're looking at Tillman, Judy, Jamari Thrash has been impressive. What we've seen on TV and the little bit that we saw.
He has.
Camp.
We were trying to figure out in talking to some of my colleagues out there the other day, should Bond, make an ascension that we think he's going to organically make here? Does he kind of jump Thrash in the pecking order? And I kind of see that as the way, but yeah, Thrash has been impressive. Some of these younger guys that they're trying to get through, maybe potentially on the waiver wire so they can keep him on the practice squad. That Caden Davis kid, help me pronounce
it. Where's Deontay Johnson? That was what I was going to ask you.
Deontay Johnson, another interesting one. Like he's had some good moments in camp. He's had some also moments where just, not quite on the same page with guys. But in general, I think that's a guy to keep an eye on tomorrow.
Okay.
I think Deontay Johnson is going to be a guy that they're going to maybe try to feed the ball to a little bit just to make sure that, okay, we want to keep him. We, you know, he's, don't get me wrong. I think he's on the roster or what have you, but
okay.
What kind of a role could he have? Could
I, see, I think he's in a weird spot because the investment wasn't that great to bring him in.
No.
So, and then like, I think we're going to talk about Gage Larvinen.
Is that right? That's it. I'm sorry.
So, no. And I mean, Luke Florio's story was awesome too. I hope he's here once he's healthy and they can get him on the practice squad. Yeah. I mean, the story's too good too.
It is. And I think he was tracking that way clearly.
To watch the catch that he, the one catch that he made with the one hand out of bounds, going out of bounds in the first preseason game was
and like, active on special teams, all those kinds of things, right? Yeah.
So Larvinen, I think, is interesting. But then when you get into this, okay, so we're talking about keeping Deontay Johnson. We're talking about, you know, you talked about Caden Davis, who's looked pretty good. And, you know, like David Bell's off the radar completely gone. And so, but Larvinen's a guy that you're probably sitting there going, well, man, he's been impressive. Everyone talks about him in practice being impressive. But if you keep four quarterbacks, he's the guy that's right there on the bubble.
And we've heard some of these reports this week about, you know, teams reaching out for wide receivers. I think
running backs too.
Running backs as well. I think, you know, potentially that the trade that they made earlier this week with Briggs to the Jets may have been prompted by the Jets reaching out to the Browns about either wide receivers or running backs. And then it turned into, okay, hey, we got this guy to offer. So, it's going to be interesting. It's an interesting, season, our preseason finale. Followed by just 48 hours before those first cuts. So buckle up.
Just give me one more time. Just give me your general feel on where we are with this team. And is this team, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about this in the next segment. But
I'm going to give you more optimism than you've heard, I think.
I was with Hanford Dixon last night. He was unbelievably optimistic about, he was talking about 9 wins yesterday. So
I'll be honest with you, Andy. I think they could fall in that 7-9 win range. I really do. This team, listen, last year got away from them very early, right? Especially with the lack of quarterback play over the first 7 weeks. Then the injuries started to mount, what have you. The ball didn't bounce their way. You need a little bit of luck in this league. We all know that. I also feel like, I'm not saying that Joe Flacco can recapture that magic from 2023, but he definitely brings a good vibe in there. And I think if you heard Myles Garrett the other day, he talked about, you know, just the fact that he believes in him. And I tried to get Stefanski to address that the other day, and it was almost, and I knew he would give the answer that he gave, but part of the reason, and I know people are pushing back about Joe Flacco, why would you want to start a 40-year-old? Well, you want to start a 40-year-old because this guy is as proven as there is in the league right now, right? He took you to the playoffs a couple years ago. Granted, very different circumstances, but given where you're at right now, this is the best option that you have. And I think it's important for this team to start out with a quarterback that they all believe in. That's not to say that Kenny Pickett wasn't going to get a legitimate shot to win the starting job, because I think if he hadn't been injured, I think that was a two-man competition. And I think it was a jump ball, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I think he was probably the leader coming into the clubhouse when this thing all started. Let's go talk about that when we come back here in a second. So Tom Withers is in today for Jeff, and you can be in too. 216-474-0092. Basket of Phelps, 92.3 The Fan. Tom Withers is in today. Jeff is off. Jeff will be back with you tomorrow on the Browns Radio Network at halftime and post. I'll be with you pregame. Looking forward to it. I'll be on, Ken Kerman's on before me for the first 2 hours, and then I'll do the last 2 hours getting you set with Tyvus Powell. So we're looking forward to getting you ready for the game tomorrow on the Browns Radio Network. So, but Tom's in today. We've been talking about what's going on in the Browns. He was in Berea for most of the week, right?
Yeah, a couple
this
days.
Week. So.
Yeah.
I was retirement.
It's not.
You're too young to be retired, by the way.
I know. It's, you know what? It was great to be back out there, not only to see some of the media colleagues and a few of the Browns players that I especially like. It was good for my brain. It was good to be like, you know, back in kind of the work groove a little bit.
Right.
And so that was important. And, you know, I was there for a couple of interesting days. You know, we can get back into it in a little bit here. The Myles Garrett,
the
discussion, denial.
I kind of want to get it because I think it's interesting when we can have these kind of conversations. And Jeff and I have them every once in a while, but we don't. I mean, there's a difference between being a beat reporter and sitting here in the ivory tower. And I've said this for 13 years, right?
Yeah.
And so when you're there, and I'm sure, like, isn't that the way to look at it? If you're sitting in Berea, you're like, well, you know, you're doing all this work and you're into the minutia of everything that's going on. And then you've got about 15 voices in town that sit in the ivory tower and they judge everything. And really, and it's just weird because, I mean, for years, both Jeff and I, we were in the pit.
Right.
And so now all of a sudden you sit up here and you're like, you have opinions based on this and that. But yet, I'll be honest with you, when you're sitting in this chair, you know things, but you just don't know them the same way that Tom does and the way things are going on inside.
Thank you. And I feel the same way about, you know, many of the people that cover the Browns, and which is why the frustrating thing at times, Andy, over the last few years was that you'd be at practice every day, you watch what you watch, you formed your opinions, and then suddenly some national writer, you know, makes a phone call or gets a phone call from somebody in Berea, however that works, right? Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you feel like, God, do I even cover this team? Like, what are they seeing that I'm not, et cetera? So it's tough, and especially now in this social media world, in this aggregation world where everybody takes a little snippet from a practice and turns one play into something that it's not, right? I had this conversation with a couple of the writers this week out there. You know, there's been a lot of analysis about this quarterback group, and
right.
That's what we do, right? And I'm afraid sometimes, though, that reporters, and I'll include myself in this mix, you don't know exactly what you're looking at because it's almost like those PFF grades you get on a Monday after a Sunday Browns game, right? Where
right.
somebody grades out it as a 98, and you have to skew that because you don't know what play was called. You don't know if somebody ran the wrong pass route. You don't know if somebody missed a block, right? There's only so much you can know by just watching the play. And I feel like that's happened a little bit with this quarterback competition where, you know, you're not exactly sure, is that where the ball was supposed to be going? Did Sanders miss a guy downfield? Was Gabriel supposed to check down on that play? You know, is he feeling the pass rush? Obviously, they're not sacking these guys. So it's just been different. But yeah, it's great to be out there and to really kind of not only see it and feel it and really get a sense about, you know, what this 2025 Browns team is really all about.
All right, so what? Let's dive into that with the quarterback situation, because we sit here and we talk about it all the time. Like, I look at this, and I've said this yesterday too, that Flacco's a guy that's had the experience. He knows what he's. And by the, if I'm Kevin Stefanski, there's like one guy I really, really trust, and it's Joe, because he's seen it work with him before. Whether it didn't work in a playoff game or not is irrelevant right now. Joe just has that experience. Now, does he still have the physical attributes? I think his arm is. And I don't know. I mean, younger guys just have a little bit more pep and energy, but so what? I'd rather have a guy. I mean, how long did we watch Ben Roethlisberger or Peyton Manning stay out there long past their prime to run out of the pocket, right? So, but then I look at Kenny Pickett, and I'm like, all right, we didn't get to really see this guy. They took him in first. Maybe that was the guy they were thinking about. And then you have two rookies, and I was blue in the face yesterday screaming about, why are we in such a hurry to get rookies out on the field?
Yeah.
And can't we just follow the old school pattern of, let's give these guys the opportunity to develop and then put them out, because there's just no way you can know and be in the same rhythm with the coaching staff and be able to be in the rhythm with the same 10 guys that are in front of you and just doing that after like 3 months.
Right.
It's just, this is pros. This isn't, we're switching. Like, to me, in college, it makes more sense because your lineup, your offensive line, your wide receivers, your running backs, they change every year.
Correct.
When you're in the NFL, these guys have been here for 2 or 3 years, for sure.
Yeah.
So I don't. What are we really?
Let's stop.
What are we really hearing?
Let's start and stop with number 15 for a second. I mean, Joe is not your average 40-year-old, right? He's kept himself in remarkable shape. I mean, the fact that he could even be out there at 40 is just an absolute marvel, right? And
right.
It's a very select list. I think he'll be the 18th quarterback to ever start a game in the NFL over 40.
Yeah, we were going through this yesterday. I think it's somewhere between 18 and 20 or 15.
Okay. We tried to get it pinned down the other day just so we were factually correct.
And yeah, we were
18
too.
18 was the number I came up with through the Hall of Fame.
Yes, and there's a Hall of Fame number.
Correct. There is. Yeah. And oh, by the way, a bunch of Hall of Famers on there. Right.
Yeah, but you
Favre and I know you got.
I got the list. Yes, I did it yesterday.
So, and obviously, there's a reason why those guys were still playing. Johnny Unitas is on that list.
Yes,
I think he was 1-3.
Sonny Jurgensen's on that
Sonny
list.
Sonny Jurgensen.
Zeke Bradkowski was 0-1.
But as I've been told by a couple of people in the Browns building, is that Joe really views this as a chance to, you know, establish his legacy as, you know, one of the best quarterbacks of the last 20 years. I mean, he's put up some pretty remarkable numbers, right?
Yeah.
He's got 105 career wins, I think. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer necessarily, but he's certainly gone from being a villain in this town to a folk hero, right?
Yeah.
And I think
I don't even remember him playing for the Ravens. How good is that?
Did he play for the Ravens? I can't remember. Yeah,
I think so.
And just tortured the Browns, right? I mean, his record was just incredible. Well, they all have. But that said, you know, he's a guy that they knew they could trust, right? And I think, unfortunately, a year ago, I would have liked to seen the same thing happen, right? For them to build off that momentum of 2023. But I get why they were doing it, because they still felt like they could get something out of Deshaun, blah, blah, blah.
I still feel like they think they can get something out of Deshaun. I'm the only guy in town.
But we'll talk about that in the next hour.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows where that... Again, the line moves quickly in this town. You never know what could come your way. So, I, when you watch Joe in practice... He just stands. He's the varsity quarterback out there, right?
Right.
He's the guy that you know that he can see the entire field. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he plays. Now, granted, you know, he's also the guy, he throws such a beautiful ball, and that's something to behold. And, you know, it's kind of been his signature. There's always that chance, though, that he's either going to throw a touchdown pass or he's going to throw into triple coverage and it's going to get picked, right?
Right.
We saw it in the playoff game. So, but I feel like they have confidence in him. They know what they've got. I think, as I brought it up earlier, I think it means a lot to be able to stand in, for Stefanski to stand in front of that room and tell Joel Bitonio, who came back this year, that Joe Flacco is your guy, and by God, we're going to try to win as many games as we can. Whether they do or not, that's another thing, Andy. It's a tough schedule. And I have to tell you, that those first six games are about as brutal as it gets. So we'll see. But, you know, I think there's a lot of faith in Joe. And again, I don't think he's necessarily viewing himself as a mentor at this point, but I think there's an osmosis that goes on just by having Dylan and Shador watch this guy, and Kenny Pickett to a degree, watch him on a daily basis and watch the way he goes about his job, a pro's pro.
So, I was told by some folks that were in the locker room at the time that Joe, since 99, no one has commanded or had the respect of his fellow teammates the way Joe did when they had that run when they were going to the playoffs, that it was the first time for a lot of people that had been around for a while that they felt like that locker room was a locker room that was not destined for the playoffs, but like under control, no drama, quarterback who can go out there and help them win, despite the number of interceptions he was throwing, because, I mean, he was still throwing interceptions, but they were winning because you mixed it with a defense that was able to keep the other team under the amount of points that Joe had command of that. It's not that Joe had command of the locker room. The locker room wanted to look up to Joe, and he had the command to do it.
Well, and it also came at a time, Andy, where we were all searching for something, right? It was in the midst of the whole Deshaun Watson debacle, right? I mean, off of the suspension, the injury, et cetera. It was just, right? I mean, things were just really going sideways, and he brought that stability. And I was telling somebody the story the other day. The first time we as a media group talked to Joe as a whole in the locker room, you know, he got done and then he walked over his locker and then he came back over and like introduced himself to several of us. I wanted to hug him. It was like, you know, finally we have an adult in the room here.
Right.
Like somebody that really understands not only, you know, his place in this locker room and with this team, but to a bigger degree, who he is with the media and the community at large. Right. So, yeah, everything's been refreshing about him. I like the way he handles himself. Obviously, he's done it all and seen it all. Listen, could he go out there and lead them to four wins in the first six games? Yeah. Could he go out there and go 2-4 and suddenly, you know, with the first incompletion, there's chance for Shador? That could potentially happen as well. So it's going to be fascinating to watch, as always.
I'm going to ask this quick because we got to go to break here in a second. But just... if the plan was correct, who's the number two quarterback?
Right now?
Yeah.
Kenny Pickett.
If he's not healthy, then what?
Whoever plays better. You know what? I'll say this. Dylan Gabriel is ahead of Shador on a lot of levels.
Explain to people why. In fact...
we'll get back to it?
No, go ahead. Explain to people why.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. Number one, He played 63 games in college. He has a better grasp of the offense. He understands what defenses are doing at a higher level than Shador does right now. That doesn't mean that Shador can't catch up. That doesn't mean Shador has some intangibles that Dylan will never have and has shown some composure. And I think that the thing that is getting lost in the shuffle here with a lot of Browns fans is that both of these rookies took huge advantage of the opportunity that they were given. I mean, Shador went out there. Listen, he may have played in the fourth quarter. If everything had gone the way the Browns had hoped, he may have barely gotten on the field in that opener. Instead, he started it, right? And he played well, threw a couple touchdowns, forced a couple balls that I think people forget about. I mean, it gets lost in the 14 of 23 shuffle or what have you. And then Gabriel, with all kinds of pressure on him after Shadur had played as well as he did, went out and played exceptionally well last week. Sure. Was there a pick six that, you know, a ball probably that shouldn't have been thrown? No doubt. Fumble that may or may not have been his fault, but a turnover nonetheless. Still, I thought he operated the offense at a high level. He's just got a comfort right now that Shadur doesn't have, I think, in running the offense. I think that's the baseline for it at this point, Andy. That's not to say, though, that there can't be, you know, one or the other jumping the other going forward here.
Tom Withers is in for Jeff today. We're going to come back. I need you to hear what Eric Dickerson said, because it's a lot, and in particular it had to do with Shadur and what happened during the draft. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. Baskin and Phelps, Tom Withers is in today, 92.3 The Fan.